My guest at this time is investigative reporter and author Jack Cashill. His latest book is Scarlet Letters, The Ever-Increasing Intolerance of the Cult of Liberalism Exposed. In the book, Jack contends we're now a far cry from the Scarlet A affixed to Hester Prynne. Instead, he says we have a whole new list of words and opinions that are considered forbidden, and liberals get to decide what they are. And Jack, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, Greg, my pleasure. Anytime, sir.
We'll get to the new list of scarlet letters in just a moment, but first let's start with that point that I just made there in the introduction. How is it that the liberal agenda gets to decide what is and is not acceptable in polite society these days?
Well, you know, it's a good question, but it started probably about, at least 50 years ago, but it's been growing increasingly obvious that for whatever reason, and largely through their control of academia and through the media, the left has been able to dictate our morality. And it's a new sort of improvised morality that adds new sins with virtually every passing day. I mean, who would have thought 2 months ago that you could get a scarlet T for transphobia, you know, for not applauding sufficiently when Jenner won the Arthur Ashe Courage Award?
And let's talk about that example, because when Jenner made that announcement that he was transitioning to a woman, it seemed like there was an instantaneous appropriate language for that, things you had to acknowledge in terms of which gender, the first name change, and all these sorts of things. It almost seems like it's organized and orchestrated even as events happen on the fly. How does that work?
Well, in fact, there's a reason to believe it is orchestrated. Disney owns both ESPN and ABC, and the word was that Jenner's reps went to ABC. They say, hey, listen, you want this two-hour interview, this surefire blockbuster interview with Diane Sawyer? Well, we want our guy to win the Arthur Ashe Courage Award. And that's what happened. The day after Jenner wins that award, people are being accused of being haters for not applauding enough or for just calling him Bruce. You know, if you didn't immediately switch to Caitlin, you were a hater. That's how much control they have over the flow of the media.
Let's look at some of the other letters now, slightly out of order, but let's go next to Islamophobia, since that's been in the news with the Obama administration's very careful descriptions of ISIS and other Islamic radicals, and of course the blowback very recently towards Ben Carson for saying he didn't think Islam was compatible with the Constitution. Why is there such an effort to fight back whenever Islam is criticized or listed as a motivation behind an attack, like we saw in Chattanooga or some of these other cases around the country?
I mean, that's an excellent question, because Islamophobia is the outlier among the seven new deadly sins, along with like xenophobia, racism, sexism, homophobia, classism. And the reason is this, is that Islam, even though it would not seem to have much in common with, let's say, the gay activism, they do share one common goal, and that is the destruction of Western civilization as we know it. So they could be allies in the short term. Now, what happens in the long term, if they prevail, you know, when the people who believe that gays should be celebrated get together with gays, people who believe gays should be stoned to death, it's going to be hard to hammer out a multicultural Ten Commandments. I'll leave that to them when that day comes. I don't think it will, but, you know, we'll see.
Some folks might look at that chapter and that idea of, well, nobody wants the person who looks the worst, who adheres to their faith, to be the symbol of the entire faith. So what do you say to those people that say, when you try to paint with a broad brush for somebody like Hassan, who shot up Fort Hood, or the guy in Chattanooga, or what happened in Paris earlier this year, they're not representative of a religion?
No, they may not be fully representative, but their religion just happens to be responsible for 99% of the terrorism in the world, and you'd be a fool not to draw inferences from that. You'd be, in fact, a suicidal not to. And that's where we are. But let's face it, too. If, let's say, a Christian extremist blows up an abortion clinic, all Christians are blamed. You know, even though that hasn't happened in I don't know how many years, the blame, you know, for instance, even when Timothy McVeigh blew up Oklahoma City 20 years ago, there was, calls for the Crusades have to end, flee, the Christians are taking over the country. Well, McVeigh was an atheist who said that God, my science is God. Science is my God. It didn't matter. They're so willing to put that label on Christians. And all the things the media doesn't like about conservative Christianity, they tolerate in radical Islam. It makes no sense. And it's and the long-term self-destructive.
Let's turn to racist now. That's another one of the scarlet letters. And obviously, if you ask folks in general, left, right, center, they would say absolutely racism ought to be condemned. The civil rights progress of the 1960s in many ways represents one of the greatest achievements in recent generations for our country. But the definition has changed now. It's become political, as you write about, and oftentimes your attitude towards the person speaking, regardless of the topic, becomes labeled as to whether or not you're racist or not.
Right. I mean, today the left hands out the designation leftist, I mean racist, as woefully as the John Birch Society handed out the designation communist, except that it was a blowback against the John Birch Society for doing that. And they were never as bad. Today, to be a racist is to, you know, you could tell one off-color joke and have your life ruined. You could make a tweet. You could use a word correctly, like the word, I'm going to say it on the air, bear with me, niggardly, N-I-G-G-A-R-D-L-Y, as the city councilman in Washington, D.C. did, and be fired. It's so easy. The triggers that are so close to the surface, as Mark Stein said, even when you don't think you're committing a hate crime, chances are you are committing hate crime, you know?
And is the reaction and the development of that accusation racist essentially what we're seeing on the sexist front as well?
Yeah, because racism, activists on that front created the prototype, and everyone's been imitating it ever since. They've been creating the victimology prototype for everyone else to follow. You know, what's curious, too, is that the word Islamophobia was taken consciously from homophobia. The Islamic activists in the United States saw what success gays were having with the word homophobia and adapted it to their own cause. And like I say, they don't have a lot in common.
Expand on the sexist one just for a minute, if you can, because obviously there's a huge political divide there and a huge political element. The Obama re-election in 2012 was based largely on a perceived war against women waged by the other party.
That's right. And see, what you have to understand is that among the neo-Puritans who are dictating our morality, it's not a question of what you practice, it's a question of what you profess. And it's in that regard, they're not unlike the original Puritans. So you take a case like what happened to Todd Akin, who was running for U.S. Senator, and made an unfortunate comment about a legitimate rape. You just link the words. He's a good guy, well-meaning guy. The neo-Puritans went berserk. They wanted him out of the race. The Republicans all apologized, as they are expected to do. But 2 weeks later, you have a credibly accused rapist in Bill Clinton keynoting the Democratic National Convention. To use the word rape in an awkward context to them is not as bad as being a rapist.
We're talking with Jack Cashel. The book is Scarlet Letters. And Jack, let's move on to the classist scarlet letter now. I guess that would be a scarlet C. That's one that's been a little bit later in developing. You obviously hear it a lot with rhetoric to some extent from President Obama. Bernie Sanders is running a whole campaign on divide and the opportunity and the different classes here. How has that one gotten started, and where do you think it's going?
Well, oddly, it's the original scarlet letter. And when at the time of the Soviet Revolution about 1918, they were intent on exterminating class enemies. That was targeted, class enemies. That is, which in the Soviet Union meant anyone who had an extra ear of corn that they weren't sharing. And it never really took hold in the United States, because we've always been a pretty democratic country in that regard, and we respect wealth and we respect the people who make it. Look at Donald Trump. But it really started catching fire with that whole Occupy movement, the whole war on the Koch brothers, and a lot of that was geared towards bringing down Mitt Romney, in which they succeeded. And Romney had made the mistake of being successful. And he also made the mistake, unlike Donald Trump, of not being proud of it, not boasting about it. So it comes out the case I cite in the book, probably the most brutal case in recent years, is what happened to the Duke lacrosse team. They were accused of having white privilege. Their mistake was to be affluent. And so they were dragged in front of the tribunals accused with rape, even though there was zero evidence. Actually, there was a lot of evidence of their innocence, too. And they were you know, they had their lives ruined. If they had been members of the softball team, it never would have happened.
Jack, another one on here is denier. That one obviously has links back to the Holocaust and folks, whether they're skinheads, neo-Nazis, radicals from whether in the United States or outside of the United States, who denied that, you know, the Holocaust happened, of course. So that word is a loaded term for folks, and oftentimes today it gets used for those who aren't buying the political line on climate change. But how else is it being applied, and how significant is that one?
The problem is that there's no constituency that, to get offended the way there is for race or sex in terms of why the impact isn't as strong. But the use, that is an ugly term, because it was consciously concocted to link, just as you said, to link people who question climate change alarmism to people who deny that there was a Holocaust. I mean, it doesn't get much uglier than that. You know, that's how vengeful these people can be and how unmerciful, you know, uncharitable. At least with the original Puritans, when they gave out a Scarlet A to Hester Prynne in the novel Scarlet Letter, they did not disown Scarlet. They just branded her. And they had a little more mercy in their hearts and a little more charity than the people who do today, because today there's no atonement once you commit one of these sins.
Jack, we started our conversation kind of on the homophobe Scarlet Letter due to the Bruce Jenner story, but obviously now we're in the wake here in the first few months after a Supreme Court decision that has led to a number of things, including the Kim Davis situation. But in terms of what it means for schools and for churches and all sorts of other things, how do you think that letter is going to be played going forward, knowing that those who are advancing it have a Supreme Court decision on their side?
Well, you know, I was at a family reunion this summer. A lot of my good-hearted, you know, liberal relatives were there. They were really celebrating the Supreme Court decision, and they couldn't understand why I even saw a downside to it. And I said, it's not going to be long before you see people in prison. I didn't think it would take that long, short of time, you know, with the Kim Davis case. And here is a problem of constitutional absurdity. The way the law is supposed to work is that, you know, once, you know, you change the Constitution, once the great majority of people are on board, you know, so if you go through an amendment process, you get 3/4 of the states, et cetera. In this case, they just imposed it willy-nilly. And in so doing, they essentially criminalized Christianity. And not to mention Islam. But they don't care about Islam. They don't really care about Christianity, because the bottom line of all of these groups, and they all work under the umbrella of anti-hate, anti-racism, is to subvert traditional Judeo-Christian America. And that's what the letters are for, and that's why they seem at least to be succeeding. They will not succeed, but they certainly give the appearance of doing so.
Last question in two parts. What happens to our society if this trend continues and intensifies? And you just said you don't think it's going to continue, so how does it get reversed?
I'll answer that second question first. On June 10th of this year, just before the book came out, I wrote an article whose first sentence is this exactly. The Republican nominee for president this year will be that candidate who best learns there is no future in apologizing. A week later, Donald Trump declares, I didn't even know he was going to be in a race, and he set the prototype for how to respond to this. So his first day of his campaign, he's accused essentially of xenophobia, that is, fear of foreigners, and his comments about Mexico, and he doesn't apologize. He just does the opposite. He doubles down. So when Ben Carson's accused of being anti-Muslim, he doesn't apologize either. People are beginning to see the way out of this. And one other detail I think that was interesting and relevant to this discussion is that those Planned Parenthood tapes that emerged this summer, people beginning to ask themselves now, oh, let's see, I'm evil if I don't say Caitlyn Jenner, but the people who are telling me I'm evil are fully willing and capable of dismembering babies and trafficking in baby parts. You know, they're beginning to see that the people who are imposing the morality ought not to be imposing anything.
But if it's not reversed, what happens?
That's when the Second Amendment kicks in. For whatever reason, the left has disarmed itself and left all the guns in the hands of the right. It won't come to that point, but if it did, that's what will happen.
Jack, we'll leave it there. Thanks very much for your time.
Thanks. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Jack Cashel is an investigative reporter and author. His latest book is Scarlet Letters, The Ever-Increasing Intolerance of the Cult of Liberalism Exposed. I'm Greg Corumbus reporting for Radio America.